The world of alcohol is a large and fascinating place. As a lifelong storyteller, I enjoy nothing more than hearing people's stories, finding out what inspired them, and really what makes them tick. This is Hudson Lindenberger, the host of Booze News, and you're listening to Roar on WGN. Laura Bonner didn't set out to build one of Ireland's most ambitious new spirits brands. She simply wanted to honor her grandfather's moonshine and prove everyone wrong who said she couldn't. But the path from Donegal Potato Farm to the Joe Rogan Experience and launching in the United States was anything but linear. In Bonner's case, it involved near bankruptcy, a global pandemic, a celebrity rescue in the form of actor Russell Crowe, and a founder whose determination borders on myth. Join me as we learn more about Muff Liquor. So tell me a little bit about Muff Liquor. You know, look, I got this email from Colin. I started looking into it, and I didn't really know much about Muff Liquor. I think Russell Crowe, I loved his little bit where, you know, he was on Joe Rogan. I thought it was pretty humorous. But, you know, I'm always looking for, you know, for Forbes. I'm always looking for interesting offbeat stories. It really does get exhausting sometimes just telling the big brand story. So I try hard to avoid the big brands. And I'm doing another story about this distiller out of Indiana that just won a best craft distiller and best bourbon at San Francisco Wine and Spirits. They're only in like 14 states, but they do an incredible job. And I'm like, I'd rather tell your story than tell yet another, you know, Blanton story, which everyone understands them. So that's part of what really attracted me was I think it's an interesting story. And I think the people you have behind you is pretty, you know, get Russell Crowe and those guys in.
Well, how long do you have? Because my story is interesting, but it's a 20-year one. So the Muff Liquor Company is named after the village Muff in County Donegal. And I own a liquor business, and that is why it's called that and no other reason. My grandfather was a potato farmer who he introduced me to putching, which is moonshine, when I was 18. I was a young teenager, and I came obsessed with the idea, and I didn't realize what he was doing was illegal until I was much older. And what he would do is he would soak brandy balls, which are like cinnamon sweets, in the bottles for like a couple of weeks. And then normally on Christmas morning, there was like over 100 of us, over 100 cousins. My grand, like we have a big Irish family, as you can imagine. And we would all have this shot. And it had this thing that I just was like, I'm going to make this legal. So I was in my first year of law school. I was 19. I was only in school a couple of weeks when I sent an email to my family. My dad was an entrepreneur, my brothers and sisters. I'm a late one by 18 years. I was a surprise. And I wrote an email to them and I said, oh, guys, I'm dropping out of law school. I'm going to come home. I'm going to set up this company called the Muff Liquor Company. And I am going to learn how to make granddad's potatoes, vodka from granddad's potato. And I'm going to make this legal. Our mom, unfortunately, was terminally ill at the time. And my middle brother was like, you are not doing this. We have enough stress going on, let alone you dropping out of college. Emotional guilt obviously kicked in. I stayed in uni. I qualified. I worked for a year. I hated it. I decided I'd move to London, got into real estate. I climbed the corporate ladder, as that saying goes. And by 30, I was the UK sales director for an Australian company with over 300 staff and 17 offices. I was over in Shanghai living, working, and I was absolutely miserable. I just wanted to go home and set up the Muff Liquor Company. So at 31, I sent another email to my family and I said, I'm coming home. My dad sent all my brothers and sisters all over to see me to try and talk me out of it. And I was like, and then my brother came back and said, Dad, you need to prepare. She is coming and this is happening. And that was 7 years ago. So set up the company, bootstrapped it myself with my business partner. We were doing pretty well. Basically, all the research and everything that I carried out was all in Asia because we were working over there and Tom and I were together. So we were kind of like, let's try and figure out what it is that they like and what they want. So I found out that they like the taste of medicine as such. I was ready to launch in 2017. I waited until 2018. I wanted the 8 on the bottles because it's a sign of wealth. I was like, I had gold foil around my original bottles, which is a sign of wealth. I was going to do a cherry liqueur, which I've got a cherry shot coming out, a new product in the new year, sign of prosperity. the potato-based gin and vodka doesn't make their cheeks go red. They love peated whiskey. So this is kind of how we did our whole model. I went home and I did all the research. And then when we launched, I went to Asia and I was there for 18 months and then COVID hit. So COVID hit, I came home, my tail between my legs. I didn't have any business up and running in Ireland at all. We decided to come up with cocktail boxes, and I'm a bit of a manifestor. I love when I put my mind to something. I have a whiteboard, and I had written down that I was going to have Ed Sheeran as a shareholder and that Russell Crowe would do my first tweet when I launched into Australia. 5 years later, I ended up having both of them, but I was in Ireland. I was about to file bankruptcy because COVID, I was on my knees. My dad rang me and said, Russell Crowe is in Dublin filming. So I thought, right, I need to get in front of this guy. So I called my ex-boyfriend, who rang his best friend, who rang his sister, who rang her fiance, and said, I know where he's going to be. And I was like, look, I just need him getting this box to him. So he got the box. And then Monday morning, I got a call then just saying that he had tried it all, and he asked me, was I looking for investment? I was like, yeah, maybe, depends what you're offering. Went down, met him for breakfast went for lunch, and by the afternoon we had a deal done, and the paperwork was done really fast. So that's kind of like where we are now. But in regards to my products, I have three products. As I said, like, my first original one was the potato-based vodka. I actually ended up launching with my gin first. I don't like gin. So my friends were like, oh, you need to get ahead of this here because it's this huge trend that's coming. I went down to the distillery and I found out I actually don't like juniper berries. So have you tried any of our products?
No, they're on their way.
Oh, okay. So try the vodka first. The gin and the vodka are both the same potato base. And then we add the botanicals to make it a gin. So the gin and the vodka are both potato base. They're both six-time distilled. So they're very, very smooth. Like, try the vodka straight first. Then even when you pop the gin, when you smell it, like the fragrance of the citrus, so the natural botanicals, like, it's absolutely unreal. And we have the awards to prove it. I always say people come for the name, but they stay for the taste. And that's kind of where we're at. And then we've got a peated five-part blend whiskey. So the gin and the vodka I made because of my granddad was the potatoes. And then the whiskey, everyone kind of said to me, like, you can't be making a peated Irish whiskey. Like, that's the Scotch. And I was like, the Irish made whiskey 2 centuries before the Scots. So I was like, I'm just claiming back my own heritage. My granddad used to make us go up to the farm, up to the hill, and pick turf, like peat, when we were kids. So that smell just really reminded of me. So I was like, I'm just going to do it. And everybody told me not to do it. And I'm so glad I did because it turned out absolutely amazing. So we've got these three products, and then I've got a fourth product coming out now in the new year, which I'm very excited about. I actually feel it's going to outsell the other three completely. I just have a feeling in my gut, and that's a cherry-infused whiskey, which hasn't really been done before.
When you decided to do this, was your grandfather still alive or he passed away?
Yeah, no, my granddad was alive, but my granddad had like 11 children and was a farmer. And to him, the thought of me going home to make an alcohol, as much as he didn't discourage me, he certainly didn't encourage me. When I went over to him and I actually said to him, look, any chance can you tell me how the process of how you do this? He's like, yeah, come on in, into the kitchen. And we sat there for ages and he was like, you peel these spuds and then you steam them. And then I just made his dinner. Like, he just basically made mashed potatoes for him. And he was like, you should be focusing on your education and getting married and having children. You shouldn't be focusing on trying to go into this obscene alcohol. The devil juice. He used to always say we're all full of devilment. And he always said the putching made everybody have a little bit of devilment in them. I know he would be absolutely delighted. I know he would be super proud. So he died maybe that April beforehand, but at that stage the business had started it, so he knew that it was coming.
You were able to kind of learn from him how he made it, get the distinctive flavors. You had it rolling. You'd already gone to university. You'd already been in real estate, and you came back. And then you're about to launch it and you pass. So you really are able to bring, you know, his legacy into it.
Yeah. And for something that I think that he didn't want me to do, I just feel it in my bones that I just know that he would be just so humbly proud. Like, to me, I feel like he's going to be one of the most famous granddads ever. Like, we have him on the back of the bottle. The labels are being changed again. There's nothing that is more telling when you have a business that, like, there's so many different problems that you think that you overcome, and then something comes of it. So I've got new back labels coming to the US, and he's going to be back on the original. The original bottles we have were Irish on the back, and people really struggle to connect with the story. So we kind of just thought we would strip it back, but I'm actually going to go back and twine it again.
You said you were the baby of the family, 18 years behind. How many siblings did you have?
I have two brothers and a sister. Okay. So I always joke that I was raised with three fathers and two mothers because they all grounded me left, right, and center. So,
were you 18 years younger than your next closest sibling?
15, 17, and 18.
Like, again, I didn't live with them, but my mother remarried when I was three, and I inherited I'm 58, and my oldest brother is 74. My other one's 71, and my sister is 68. So it was the same way. Yeah, you know, I wasn't the baby from the same parents, but I was the baby. You know, my dad, they were my siblings from the moment I got adopted. But I like picking on them now because they're all old parts. So that's
you have to look after them. That's what I always say. I'm constantly looking after them now as their baby sister. So, and it's funny, you know, I'm 40, and my mom passed away 20 years ago, and my dad passed away during the summer, and I was home for a couple of months, and they were back treating me like a baby. And I was like, you do know I'm a 40-year-old woman. I live in the States to have my own business. But as soon as I'm back in their care, I'm straight back into baby sister mode. It's so funny.
So when you launched the company, you said you really focused more on Asia because you'd kind of had history over there, and then COVID hit. So you really hadn't built a groundwork in Ireland, but more created and went over there.
Yeah, well, like when I launched on the 3rd of February 2018, I was the 12th Irish gin to have launched. It was like the market was absolutely saturated. And because Donegal, where we're located, we are technically the Republic of Ireland, but they're still seen as north of Ireland. Northern Ireland, which is obviously part of the UK, they had this different distribution for us to sell into. So I was only able to sell into the Republic of Ireland. And every county was just so loyal to the one that had been launched that I just didn't have a chance to. I wasn't going to survive if I had just stayed in Donegal, and I couldn't wait until my paperwork for the North came through. And now, like, Northern Ireland are probably one of my biggest supporters. So I just kind of was like, we've been over in Asia. My business partner, Tom, had 8 offices. I just knew so many people over there because of the company that I originally worked for. And we had all Mandarin-speaking people, like Tom's PAs were all Mandarin-speaking. So if we had any problems, we rang them, they translated. So I was like, it makes sense. And I was like, everybody's trying to break America. I was like, why don't we go the other way? And it completely backfired. Most of those people, I never hear from again after COVID. I don't even know if they're still alive. Like, I don't even know if their business is still going. Everything just kind of disappeared. I'm still in Japan, and I'll revisit Hong Kong and China maybe next year. A little bit scarred from the whole experience, if I'm being really honest.
So you know, you were starting to grow it. COVID hit, of course, you know, shook the whole world up. You had to completely pivot. What did you do? Like, explain me more about the pivot. Like, you had to come back home. Did you start, say, focusing on just your home market? Because I know, but you only just got into the U.S. Is that correct?
Yeah, we launched on the 10th of January of this year in the U.S. I came home, and I try to be positive every day, and I kept saying to the team, it's okay. It's all going to be all right. Like, this is just part of it. We just have to keep growing. My whiteboard and the meetings every Monday, the team, everyone would be ringing me saying, right, what's the plan? And I was just like, just constantly dotting it going, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do. And obviously it's my responsibility as founder and CEO to save this business. And then one day I literally woke up and I was like, let's create cocktail boxes and have them home delivered either in our radius, if we can deliver it ourselves, or let's try and see if we can get proper packaging and see if we can deliver through out of all of Ireland. And at that stage, I had paperwork, so I could do it through north of Ireland. And that was the best thing we did. So that kept money coming in. We had to hire other people to come in because we needed more staff to help with the boxes. And it was actually really good fun. I just kind of kept on saying to everybody, I was like, look, we just have to keep going, and this is going, we're going to have to write it out, but we've got to get creative. And we did, and the team, in fairness to them, were just so positive anyway themselves that we just kept it going. Like, it was one of those things, like, the cards were dealt the way we were, and I wasn't going under, so I was like, we need to fight this. So I spent most of my time, a couple of hours for that first year, as a delivery driver, and I absolutely loved it. And the whole joke was, you know, 100 years ago when my granddad would have been making the putching, it would have been prohibition, like, he would have been arrested. where I was given a pass by the guards, the police, for an essential worker, because I was a delivery person, even though I was actually delivering alcohol. So I just kind of found that quite amusing that 100 years later, I was down as an essential worker.
Well, and did it work, you know, to basically, oftentimes you hear people talk like their biggest setback turned out to be their greatest advantage. You know, they were able to change. It kind of forced you back in your home market. And by doing these cocktail boxes, did you find that then as things started to loosen up, you got your spirit in? Because people were like, we know this now, because where if it had been a normal world, they never would have touched you.
Yeah. And loads of people contacted me and they were like, you know, that was absolutely, or people contacted me even to this day saying, you know, during COVID, you know, getting your little boxes, and we had little handwritten notes, and we added some sweets and stuff. And like, they said it was like a really nice moment that they got. And like, that was nice. We just thought we would just make something a little bit special of a situation that we were in. And it worked. As I said, the money that came in, and because there were cocktail boxes, the money came into, they paid it for straight away. The money came into our account straight away. So there wasn't a wait. And we kept going. We ended up stopped doing them when we started reopening again, because we were just so busy going back to our normal focus. But we have all the cocktail classes now in our brand home. So when you come to visit us, you can go into a master class and you can learn all to make our cocktails again.
And what were in the cocktail boxes? Like, someone could buy a gin one or a vodka one or a whiskey one?
So they were the perfect little measures. So I'd have them off gin, and then I would have the whatever cocktail you had bought. It had all the perfect little things, and I would have had all the garnish as well. So all you had to do was basically shake it up yourself and make it at home. And we kind of encourage people to get online with their friends and learn, do cocktail classes together, and then have a drink together, just to try and keep it a bit social. Because, you know, looking back at it was absolutely a crazy time, how lonely it all was too. So we try to keep a little bit of social.
So you kind of come through that, the cocktail kits have, you know, they kept you afloat, and they kind of, you know, surprisingly or not surprisingly, they built you a market. So now, you know, you're starting to sell again, and now you're selling in Ireland, and it's probably much easier because you're there. And did you start to kind of say, all right, now we'll just kind of do Europe, we'll stay closer?
Well, what actually happened was, so pre-COVID, I had arranged or had an agreement with Dubai and Australia. God, I can't even think of the other markets now, but those were the two biggies. And all the countries that I had worked for and got my contracts, everything was suspended because we didn't know how the disease was being submitted. So all the borders, so they weren't allowing us to send anything out of our country. So we had to wait, obviously, a couple of years. And then all of a sudden, I got this message from Australia saying, hey, Laura, we're ready to place that order now. And the order was 30,000 cases, or I'll have to double check, whatever. It was a huge order, but I didn't have the money to even make the product. So, and my advisor said to me, if you do this, you're going to go bankrupt. So be it on your head. John Teeling, I don't know if you know Teeling's whiskey, but John is an absolute legend and a gentleman, and he's a great mentor of mine. And I rang him. He said, Laura, sell a kidney. Whatever you do, you make sure that order is on that water. So I went to my brothers, who, as I said, are entrepreneurs, and I said to them, look, I need some money. And my brother gave it to me, but he said to me, it was like throwing money on a fire. And he said, but he goes, if you can get out of this, he goes, you can keep it. And then that's when Russell came in. So I had managed to get the money from my brothers to get this order, but if how long it was going to take Australia to pay me, I would have went bankrupt. So I just was kind of like, I actually can't think of any what else to do now at the moment. And then, as I said, Russell Crowe came and saved the day.
What movie was he filming? Do you know?
Yeah, The Exorcist. So he was in Dublin. I was living in Barbados at the time, so I left. So they opened up, they did a Nomad, where you, as an entrepreneur, you go live out there with no visa or whatever, you go out there for as long as you want. So I just packed my bags, and I was like, look, I need to get out of, and it was pretty dramatic. I was like, I needed to get away. I was afraid I was going to make my dad sick. So like, instead of just being like a normal person and renting a house 5 minutes down the road, I left and went to the Caribbean, which was a really good thing. Like, the people I met over there, the entrepreneurs that I met, it was the best thing for me, my mindset. And I kept the business, kept going, because I was just so positive every day. I was home for 2 weeks on holidays, and that's when my dad said to me, Russell Crowe is here. My whiteboard has not changed. I write everything down. Everything that I say I'm going to do on that whiteboard, I do it, even if it takes me 10 years or more. I just put it out there, and I'm so determined to get it done. So I saw him and I was like, right, and this is my shot. He's basically 3.5 hours away from me. If I don't do it now, I will never get this chance again. And thankfully it did. He said to me then when we were leaving, finishing the meeting, he said, oh, Laura, by the way, I'm going to bring in a few friends. And I turned around and I was like, wherever you get your buddies from is none of my business. I didn't even ask him who it was. I was like, I just didn't care. I was like, to me, the fact that Russell Crowe was going to invest in me after the situation that I was in, he said to me, he's like, I love your brand. I love your story. I love your products. He was like, I love you. He was like, you're not going bankrupt. He was like, this is the last thing that's going to be happening to you. And then, it was only a few weeks before the deal was actually done that his lawyer rang me. He said, you do know who you're getting into business with. I was like, yeah, Russell. And he was like, and do you know the rest? I was like, no. And then he was like, Ed Sheeran, Jimmy Carr, Ronan Keating. And I was like, oh. And I actually squealed and I jumped around my sitting room. Like, I honestly, I will never forget that moment. My brother thought something bad happened. He ran in and he said, what's wrong? And he was like, I just don't believe you. God, I get emotional even thinking about it. It was absolutely an amazing moment.
So, you know, you got the bottles to him. He liked it, got a message back to you. He'd like to meet you. You go to meet with him, you have a lunch, you talk, and at the end of the lunch, he's just like, I want to invest with this. Like, I like what you have going. It was kind of pretty much that quick.
Yeah, so we met for breakfast, and I think he was giving me an hour because the Rabbitohs, his team that he owns, was playing. And by the middle of the breakfast, he had the TV brought out to where we were, and he said, I need to watch this as we talk. And then breakfast went to lunch, and then lunch went to the afternoon. And I actually always tell the story that, like, normally when I go to do my pitch, you know, I tell all the good starts of my business, you know, my story and the brands and the awards, the liquid and all this here. And the first thing he said to me, right, let's talk about your finances. Like, let's talk about this debt. And I was like, oh my God, this guy's not even going to give me a second to butter him up. He's just going to hit me with the hard stuff, which was a really good lesson because I'm always mentally prepared now for any other meetings like that. So we went through it all. I told him everything. My whole motto in life is it's easier to tell the truth than tell a lie. So I have nothing to hide. The cards that I have been dealt in life are the cards that I have. I'm going to be successful with this brand no matter what. So I just need to write out the situation, whatever current situation I'm in. And then, after a while, he just said it. So we shook hands, had a hug. And he's so fast. Like, I think it was on the Wednesday and I got the email from his lawyers on that Friday. It was just all so quick. Yeah, it was amazing. I will be forever grateful for him. He's great.
Is he and Ed, they're all part owners. They own a stake in the company?
Yeah. They own over 30%, the whole lot of them. I don't know the breakdown of what they have now, but they have a company called the Mufflicker Men. I know, what he told me afterwards, I was like, mate, you can't. I was like, you do realize that our accounts are public knowledge. So I was like, and he's like, I think it's hilarious. I'm like, do you know what? You're Russell Crowe. You're one of the megastars of the world. You can call yourself whatever you want. So, but they're great. And the joke was Ed Sheeran is Irish, Jimmy Carr is Irish, Ronan Keating is Irish. And I kind of made a joke to Russell. I was like, you're the only one who's out. So he ended up doing a heritage test for to see what it was. He thought he was New Zealand, but he's actually 52% Irish. So I said to him, I was like, so you're half good. I was like, we're bringing you back to your roots. So they're all Irish now.
It's funny. We have a condo in southern Portugal. So we spend several months in the Algarve region, which, anyone from the UK knows where that is because it's your all's vacation spot. And we play a lot of tennis in our tennis center. Like when we're there, we're usually there in this spring, early summer, and our whole tennis center, we have all these round robins at, and it's always people from the UK, and we end up meeting them all, and we're playing. We have these, we have these clinics and round robins, but inevitably they'll put the groups together, and oftentimes, it'll be doubles, and I'll be with someone on the other side, and it'll be a Scot or an Irish or Australians are there, and we'll be against the English, and I'll just be like, I'll never forget once I was playing with this woman. I said, "What's the goal?" She goes, "I've got the English, of course, mate." she goes, "You're part of the rebels. You're thrown out of the country too." He goes, "We're gonna kill him." I'm like, "All right, let's do it."
That's so funny. The way I always tell them, they have to play that down. But are you not down in Punta del Lago? Is that where you are?
We're in Valdelobo.
Oh,
right next to Quinta.
My family. So we had an apartment there my entire life, my 15 summers. We are there to the point where a gap, because I was like, I cannot go back to Portugal. But my brother, my dad, they spent a lot of time out in Quinta del Lago. They play golf, so they're there all the time.
So you still have your apartment?
My brother has a place now. We use his. My dad got rid of his a couple of years ago, and then we have them. But my plan would be, please God, when the time comes, that I'll have another place there, because it's just really nice just to have all the kids, the nieces and nephews and whatever. My nieces and nephews are my age, and they're all married with kids. So, like, I've got all the greats, as we call them. So we like to holiday together.
Yeah, we often walk the boardwalk from Valdelobo over to Quinta, and we eat at that little restaurant that's by the pond there, where all the kids are on the paddle boats and stuff like that.
So Muff Liquor is in all those bars.
Nice.
Yeah. So my gin is in all those bars. My vodka is in a few of them. A lot of them. Most of the Irish bars are owned by the Irish. There's an Irish group out there, so they own like 12, maybe 16 actually. So they're really good, but they also support the other Irish brands as well. So we're taking in turns.
Nice. So you did this, you know, you build the brand up, it's getting better, your groundwork's getting better and better. And now you set your eyes on the US, and you know, you've got a great spokespeople for you who love your brand, have no problem talking about it. How's it been since you've been in the US?
Yeah, well, I was meant to launch last September in Florida. I moved over to Miami, I think the end of August, and then the hurricane season hit. So our shipment got stuck in the water for like 3 months. So we end up having to pivot our plan, and we end up launching in, no, I think it was still Florida, and then we came up to New York. So we're in over 40 states now. My plan is to be in the first Irish brand to have 3/ products ever to be in the States of America. So I plan to have my gin, vodka, whiskey, and my shop product. No other Irish brand has a portfolio like it in America with so many states. So I'm going after this crown, Hudson. That's my plan. And then, yeah, we were just saying, like, so we're in Total Wines and ABC and Bevmo and Bevmax and Shopify. So, look, it started off amazing. The tariffs have obviously knocked us for six. I went to bed in profit and I woke up in debt. Like, it was kind of like how tragic it was. That was a bit of a shock. However, like, my brother says to me all the time, like, God, this business seems to be quite hard. And I was like, I don't know if it is or not, because I've never owned a business before. So everything that has just happened to me, I just kind of feel it's just part of it. Like, we had Brexit announced like a few months before I moved home. Then we had the civil war in Hong Kong. Then we had the Suez Canal got blocked. Then we had COVID. Then we have the tariffs. I'm like, I just don't know if this is just part of business, or if it's like the bigger the stress, the bigger the reward's going to be at the end. You know, you have to kind of keep the positive on this. Sometimes I'm like, is the universe just telling me, Laura, maybe you shouldn't be doing this? And then something good happens and I'm like, nope, the universe is telling me I need to just plow through and keep going with this. So that's my plan.
So are all three of your products are available in the US?
Yeah, my gin, vodka, and whiskey. Yeah, so in over 40 states, they're all available. However, some stores only have maybe two products, or vice versa. Some stores have all three. It's a little bit annoying when customers write to me and I'm like, yeah, we're in Bevmax, whatever, and then they go, oh, your gin and vodka is there, but your whiskey's not. I'm like, oh. So it's, you know, frustrating. But again, we're only 10, 11 months in, so.
Talking about the tariffs, so what is he hitting you guys with? I mean, who knows? He changes it every day.
Yeah, we're changing, so it's between 15 and 20%. But, like, okay. I don't think people realize the rippling effect that it's not just him hitting us with tariffs. Then our shipping is hitting us with tariffs. Then our bottling is hitting with tariffs. Then our labels are hitting us. Like, it is just a constant rippling effect. And to be honest, like, I'll be really honest, there was a part of me in July, I was like, am I facing bankruptcy again? You know, and at this stage, I was like, I am so overly exposed. I am in America, which is the whole point of getting into America is it's the American dream. And then I was like, God, my American dream's turning into a bit of a nightmare, like, really soon. But as people keep on reminding me, you could be in 10, like 100 countries. If you're not in America, you're not going to be big. You could be in America and only in America and leave the rest of the world. You'll be successful. So I just have to fight through this and get through this. And a few of my competitors who are my friends, like, they're folding, they're like on their knees, and I am just like, I just have to get through this and push through, because it will settle down eventually again, and when it does, we will be stronger than ever. So we're raising more money, and that's what I'm doing right now.
Well, if it helps you any, he's he's done no favors for the American distillers either. A lot of them are really struggling, especially the bourbon industry, which I grew up in the heart of Bourbonville, and I write a lot about bourbon, and he has really badly hurt them. Because
how are they affected?
They're affected, A, because of all the cost of goods are going up. But B, he shut the whole Canadian market down to.
I know. Europe.
The Canadian market has shut its doors to the United States spirits. And the thing about Canada is, as you probably know, it's all state-owned liquor stores. So it's not like, you know, Total can say, we don't care, we're going to sell it. And they, I mean, all this rhetoric about them being the 51st state. And
I know.
Like, it was a very dumb thing to do, because they've been very good friends of ours and there was nothing to be gained. And like, I've talked to so many bourbon people, they're like, A, they over-leveraged themselves and got exposed. I mean, they have a lot of liquid laid down, but Canada is the largest export market for United States spirits because it's so easy. They ship them.
Like, there's not one. My friends live in Canada. They said there is not an American
nothing.
They
nothing.
It's completely gone.
Until he is gone. And like where we live on, you know, we do our falls and winters on Hilton Head Island, and we have a huge snowbird population of Canadians that come down here in the winter. None of them are coming back. I mean, no Canadians are here.
We invited our friends to come down and spend Thanksgiving with us, and I'm not staying here to eat. And they're like, no, I'm not coming to America.
Nope.
I was like, right, okay. Speaking of Canada, my good news is I'm launching in Canada in January. I'm going to be in 150 stores in Manitou. How do you pronounce it, Colin?
Manitoba.
Yeah.
Hudson's got it.
Yeah, thank God. I actually had to write it down and break my words down because I was like, I can't remember how to pronounce this. But, well,
that's good, because I'm telling you, there's a huge void right there, because I've just been starting to sniff around it, but a lot of Canadian spirits brands are starting to kind of launch to fill this void, but like, they're not buying anything from America anymore. So they want something, and they like
the
Irish.
The thing I find is with consumers is they hate being told what to buy and what they can buy. And our generation and the Gen Z, my God, like, I feel that they'll end up rebelling. I just don't think it's going to be sustainable. But like, the silver lining, I suppose, is for us that we are going to get into Canada, and we didn't think we were going to get in. But I suppose now they're looking at other markets and looking at good products. And thankfully, we do have a great reputation, and we're kind of, our brand awareness is getting out there. So like, we always joke, Ireland has less than 8 million people in its county, but over 65 million Irish passports in the world. Like, we're everywhere. And the one thing with the Irish, we really support each other overseas. So
it's the beauty of Ireland. Anywhere you go in the world, there's always an Irish bar somewhere.
For sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, it's also the same gig. It's another roadblock. But the flip side is, you know, hopefully, I mean, things change. I think a lot of these tariffs get rolled back. But then at that point, you'll be entrenched in Canada and you'll have broken another market because of something stupid while you survived in the U.S. And then, look, the tariffs are not going to stick around.
But I don't know how long it's going to last for. So we just have to prepare ourselves to fight through it.
So your company's still there. You have it. You're now in the United States. You're about to launch Cherry. You're dealing with all these, you know, ups and downs. But it seems like you're just singularly determined just to drive this thing home, and I don't care. You know, it is what it is. We'll survive.
I spoke to an investor last week, and he says, so like, what happens if this doesn't work out? Isaac, it will. He's like, I know, but like, what happened? I was like, there's no point having a conversation. I was like, I'm not going to lose your money. I was like, I'm not going to fail. So I was like, trust me when I say I will fight until my dying breath for this company. I was like, this has been a thing since I was 16. I talked about it for 12 years. It took me so long to set it up and have it. Everything I am so proud of it. There's not one thing that I have a weak link anywhere. I was like, I've got investors, I've got bulls, I've got importers. I was like, I've got these celebrities, my brand home, my team. Like, I don't have a weak link in it. Like, there is no option other than to win and to continue on with this here. So if I've learned anything this year, I found out 5 days after burying my father that this tariffs was going to face me with bankruptcy. I've never realized how resilient and strong that I have been. And if anything, I'm going to take away this as a positive. It will just be a really interesting chapter of my book when I write it in 10 years' time.
How much I'm sure, look, you know, Russell and these guys, they're all investors. I'm sure you have conversations with them. Is that part of the reason why when he's on Rogan, he talks about Muff Liquor? Is there like, look, you know, we got to do whatever we can because we're all so tied into this.
Yeah, of course. And the thing too is, as much as I love them, I always remind them the biggest celebrity is the liquid in the bottle. And I don't necessarily want all these male celebrity men talking about Muff Liquor. I am primary. This is my business. This is my story. This is my grandfather's. This is my recipe, my idea, everything about it. They're my secondary. They're here to support me. Russell is, I'm really close to Russell. Russell and I speak at least once a week. Like, he's so invested in the business and myself, and he wants us to succeed. When he contacted me afterwards, he said to me, how are you? And I said, I have never felt such fear and grief in my life. And I was like, but please don't give up on me. And he was like, we're going nowhere. So he knew that. And to honestly, I'm delighted that he's speaking about it, because it wasn't something that we necessarily agreed on when they came on board. To me, I kind of feel celebrity alcohol endorsed brands, or everyone kind of goes, ugh, another one, where these guys are generally interested and were generally involved, and they want to see myself and the team succeed. And it, like, let's be honest, he doesn't need to do it for the money. He's doing this out of being a good person, I believe. Like, you know, I don't know. Sometimes I'm like, why do rich people invest in companies that are going bust? Because they believe in something good and they want to give people a chance. And that's what he has. And he's created so many jobs for by doing that. So I just think it's good karma.
No, I think so. It's good to hear too. You know, when you hear stuff like this, that I agree, there are so many celebrity brands out there, and it does get worn out when it's just pounding you to death with the celebrity. And it's like, great, but I think people want more than that. I do think it. So,
yeah. And like at the beginning, when I was like, okay, guys, so you're all involved now. Can you go on social media and talk about it? And they were like, no. They're like, this is your brand. This is up to you to do this here. And then Ed actually made a really good point. He's like, Laura, do you realize you put all of us together on social media? There's over 100 million followers. He was like, if you're not available nationwide, or you're not available online or in other countries, they were like, and we tell our fans, go buy a bottle and you don't have stock. He was like, they're just going to turn on you. And he was like, so we've got a bit of work to do first. And I'm still not there with the things that they've asked me to do. So next year will probably be a time where, as I said to them, I don't want them plastering all over social media, but the support has been great. And like the Joe Rogan shout out was phenomenal. It really helped with sales. So it kind of showed all of us, with a little bit of them actually doing anything, it does benefit us. But at the end of the day, this is my responsibility to get this brand up and running. And that's what I'm going to do.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Laura. This has been a great interview. And
I'm excited to see it. My family are like, Forbes. I'm like, I know. Look at me.
It's like I said, I'm a sucker for good stories like this. So
thank you so much for your time. It was an absolute pleasure chatting to you today.